Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you happen to be around the world today. Thank you for coming to this session on the 10 new things for developers on Windows 10. It's a cram-packed session, and joining me is Mark Schramm. Mark is also the moderator during the session doing text, and he'll be answering questions kind of in the background while we're moving along, but all the main questions verbally will be at the end. This is 10 new things. It's a lot to get into this amount of time. So this is going to be kind of a lightning talk of a lot of stuff. You have access to these slides later on, but you'll be able to download those. So some of the slides I talked to you about, I'll say these are reference slides. We won't spend a lot of time on them. The idea is to get you exposed to what those 10 new things are and give you a reference at the end. A lot of what we're doing today is based on build that happened 2 weeks ago. So we're getting information that first was disclosed 2 weeks ago on a RC or preview build using an RC version of Visual Studio. So, you know, what could possibly go wrong? So these are the 10 new things, and the 10 new things are in 10 topic areas, and I've split them up into kind of like four kind of super areas, going all the way from the universal platform at the bottom, which shouldn't have two Fs, but never mind, going all the way up to tooling. So we'll talk about the platform, the features in Windows 10 you can connect into, the UI stack on top of that, and end with the tools. This is all about basically getting your applications universally across all these kind of devices, from the Raspberry Pi 2 all the way up to the HoloLens, coming out, you know, at a later date. With the Universal App Platform, you're going to be able to build for all of these and have one binary, which is a kind of great new thing, and it makes developing easier, it makes distribution easier. But first, we're going to talk about the app model, or what I would say is the way for your application to actually run within the environment, what you have to do to get it installed, running, talking to services, updated, and removed. This is now unified across all the devices, and you'll hear the kind of expression Universal Windows Platform or Universal Windows Apps kind of interchangeably in the presentation. And now everything is pretty much done with APEX. It's kind of like the future of the way of getting things done and deployed through the store. If you've developed on Windows before, you'll know that there were different sets of APIs. Now, 85% of the APIs are common to all the device families. That means you can get pretty much done everything with just one core set of universal APIs. So the Universal Windows Platform has this kind of universal core set, which covers 85% of situations. In fact, if you write to that core set, your app will actually run across all the devices. Now, let me introduce the term API contract, which is a named and versioned set of types, methods, events, properties, or enumerations. Those things will actually allow you, if you pick a specific contract, you can check to see if it's there, and if it's there, you can go ahead and use it. Now, in fact, there's also a device family, which is a superset or set of those API contracts, and together they actually define additional supersets of functionality on the platform. So desktop is one, mobile one, holographic is another, maybe there's also IoT. Right now, desktop and mobile are the only ones that are available, and you kind of add extension SDKs into Visual Studio to allow you to develop towards them. So at runtime, you can actually query to see what API contracts are there, whether it's an API contract or even a specific type or method, and then you can kind of use that if it's available, kind of light up features that might be available on a specific type of device family. Now, just because an API is there doesn't mean to say it'll always give you success, but it should fairly, if it's there, it should be that it's either there or it's not. If a contract is there, then everything about the contract is there, but it might give you a result that says you can't do something. For example, the printer APIs may be available on Xbox, but it doesn't mean that you'll ever get a printer on an Xbox. So let's do a quick demo. Let's switch into Visual Studio. I'm going to go through a variety of demos through here and using the projects I have, or go as we go along. Now, one big major difference is if I want to do a File New Project, I'm going to get one Windows Universal Project. Obviously, there's just one app and there's some libraries. The Windows team and DX are actually working at Microsoft on creating kind of a template that has some base functionality built into it, but there's no separate app for Windows Phone or separate app for desktop. It's just one app in this particular case. Once I click OK, you might remember in the past you got that kind of annoying dialogue that comes up and says, you have to log in, and you have to do that like every 30 or 60 or whatever days, and it's kind of annoying. That's all kind of gone now, and in fact, you can actually developer unlock your device directly. So if I go into settings on my device, under update security, you'll see there's this for developer section, and in there I'll be able to actually do the unlock. I can't do it actually in this particular build, so there's a workaround that I'm going to tell you about that you need to know. So I'm actually going to go into a group policy editor that I have running already. And again, you'll see, you can find, you can search on this to find exactly where it is. But under computer configuration, admin templates, Windows components, and app packaging, I've actually enabled two specific things because there are two levels. There's side loading and this developer. So side loading means you can put trusted apps onto this device without all the hassles you had before. And the other setting allows me to actually kind of create and certify my own apps and deploy them onto my own device. So that's kind of pretty important to know. With Windows Phone today, you have to use the older developer tools for registration to unlock, but those will also get the same settings feature to allow you to get in and unlock your device as well. So if I have my application here, this is kind of conforming to the core universal set. So if I have a look, you'll see it's actually conforming to Windows Universal, which is the base set, right? So if I want to do something that might only be available on somewhere else. For example, I want to know if there's a camera button, and I want to, so I can actually do kind of is an event present for listening for a camera button, and I can actually go and fire up an event handler if necessary. So if I uncomment this code, you'll see, right, that seems reasonably good, but okay, this is not necessarily available on every platform. So what I have to do is go into my project, add a reference, and you'll see in here there's this universal app section that are weather extensions, and the two extensions available today are desktop and mobile. So I'll do mobile, click OK, and within a few seconds, my little error will go away. So now I'm only going to hook up for that event if that button is available. And that's kind of how pretty much what you do. You can do it at an API contract level or a specific event level, and that way you can light up your app. And this same app will still run on other platforms that don't have a camera button, but this code would then never be called. It's as simple as that. So let's go back to presentation mode. So deployment, everything is now is AppX. Everything goes through the store by default. I just talked to you about unlocking. This is one of those reference slides that we need to come back to later on because I want to make sure we keep moving through the content. You can also deploy to a storage device, your app, it will be encrypted. You also have partial downloads, so if you have different resolutions, DPIs, assets, languages, only the relevant ones will get downloaded. And if you, as a publisher, publish multiple apps, you'll be able to share some actually storage and have common information. But a key major point now is that .NET Native is used for compiling all the apps that go through the store. So when you actually publish to the store, you're publishing MSIL code, and in the cloud, that's actually compiled down to native code with appropriate architecture types. This gives massive benefits in terms of cold startup and even memory size. So a key benefit that you want to look into more specifically. You can actually even take a Windows desktop app and deploy that as an app in the store. You can pretty much have full access, full lifecycle access, but there are a few things here. You want to come back and check those in terms of what you can't actually do when you're using that desktop app as a store app. So this is also a big move. You'll also have heard that Android apps can run with a subsystem on Windows 10 mobile, and that you can recompile iOS code using a special new compiler and trying to bring that to the platform as well. One thing I'll point out, I think the improc extensibility may actually be opened up in the future. Interact communication, number two in our list of things. So before you can actually launch an app and say, I want to do mail. So I want to mail to somebody, maybe here's the subject, here's the body. When you do that, the system will say, well, here are all the apps that understand the mail to your protocol, here's a list. So that has some perils in some cases, and if you're writing a couple of apps, you might want to connect those things together more concretely. So you can actually be very specific now about the exact app you want to launch, and also query to find if that app's even there, or even what set of apps are available for a specific protocol. You can even now go further than that, and you can actually launch the app in a modal dialog type way, get some information, pass it back. And you can even do the same thing without a UI. So you can have an app that's running in the background that provides information, maybe even calls a web service, and brings something back to you as well. So let's go and demo that one. So in this case, I have two apps. I have a launcher, and I have a modal task provider, which will be the app that gets launched by this other one. So I'll just make this my startup app, and we'll launch it, and you'll see what it does. So here's my app running. I have a button I can click. So if I click this button, what I'm saying is go and get me this information from another app whose area of concern and expertise is getting me that information. So it's launched the second app. And then in fact, this prompt here was actually passed from the first app. We'll see that in a second. So if I say, what's my Twitter handle, for those who didn't pay attention and then want to follow me, you can do this. And when I click set result, the app quits and the result was passed back. Now, this is just a name value property bag. You can also do shared files through shared access in the system as well. So that's extremely powerful now as a way to use other apps to get other things done. If I quickly look at how that was done, you'll see that all I had to do when I clicked my button down here was I did use the launcher. Now, we had the launcher code here before, but now we have this launch results. So I'm able to pass in a property bag of values here. And I'm also able to get back a property bag or dictionary of values that I use to display. I'm just using the mail to protocol. And here I've specified a specific family, package family name, which is known or very specific and unique to my other app. So in my other app, when I launch the app, I just come right down to here. Let's just go down. And you'll see when it's activated, it remembers the fact that there are some information that we've been activated for the purpose of getting results. And when I've got my results, I'm actually just going to call report completed on some on the variable that I've kept hold of in my app object. So it's fairly straightforward, and you just need to do a few extra things in the manifest file to declare that you have this ability to handle protocols. Here I am handling the mail-to protocol, and I'm saying that I always return results. So I can't be called just generally with this protocol. I have to say being called with the purpose of getting results. So let's move on to number three. Number three in the list is, these are some extra information that you'll want to know about as well in terms of just the details of the steps I was just talking about. And I also mentioned the app service, the ability to do the same thing but in the background. This is already kind of done in Windows 7.5 and 8 and 8.1 in terms of the People app using the Twitter app and Facebook app to get data in the background, make requests. And now in Windows 10, all these apps or subsystems are actually using the same service, and you can actually do the same thing as well. And if you do, it might look something like this. So for example, on the left, I have the Maps app, which gets data from Bing and exposes that information as an endpoint on the device. So it might have a cache of map data, and then maybe Cortana or the Uber app might query that service in the background to get requests. And it does actually launch a little mini instance of a task for every single one that runs. Another option might be like Microsoft Band. Microsoft Band has an app that's an expert in getting the data over Bluetooth from that band, and it might be able to provide some of that data to other apps to consume in other ways. So hey, a reference slide for you to look at later on to talk about what happens with the lifetime of the app and some best practices to package up your app service to be used by other people. So now we're on to number three, background tasks. On the right-hand side, you'll see the typical model for running in the background. So this is actually now available. So this is the model across all devices, but also background tasks provided an additional ability to run things in the background without a UI when the app wasn't running. That's now available across all devices as well. And in fact, there were some limitations on that, which made it kind of difficult to use, or maybe you wanted to go to a full desktop app or a Windows service. But now you have some other options, including extended execution. You have new triggers. You have the ability to do optimistic task execution, which means if the opportunity exists because of resources, Wi-Fi, power, keep going in the background if you want to. You can also do in-proc tasks and socket triggers that you may also want to look into. So now basically what would happen before is you'd have a running application, it might switch the background and it would be suspended. But now you can actually request an extension in the middle there, and you can actually keep running until you're ready, and then it suspends when you're ready. So if you need to save to the cloud or do extra processing, you have the opportunity. It's possible the operating system may revoke you, in which case you only have about a second to clean up. And if you're like a long running app, like a turn by turn direction app, you can well ahead of time say, I just want to have an extension before you even suspend me. So when the user switches away from the application never even suspends, and it just keeps running, and it may be revoked if resources dictate. So let's just quickly show you that as well. So if you've ever done this before, you'll know you've created, you've reacted to the unsuspend event. So I'll show the unsuspend event in my application. So on suspending, normally you might do something quick between a get deferral and a complete to save some data. But now you can actually say, I want this extended execution cycle. You can give a description so it could appear to the user and give a enumeration and reason, and also register for that revocation in case it happens. And then you go ahead, if you're allowed, and typically you would, especially on the desktop, be able to extend your execution, and you can save to the cloud. So on the desktop, it might be that your apps kind of keep on running like they were desktop apps with full execution lifecycle without ever being suspended. There's a variety of triggers here. This is a reference slide for you to come back to, so you can see the additional triggers, but they evolve around great new things like Bluetooth LE, so you can do beacon kind of activity as well, and a few extra triggers that were missing before that really kind of help round out the picture of when you can have a background task aside from keeping your foreground execution running. The opportunistic task is this ability to actually just keep going. So you can actually, for specific tasks like an application trigger, a maintenance trigger, or a device use trigger, you can actually, when your background task is run, you can just keep going and going and going. You still have a 16 megabyte cap, but previously you'd only have 30 seconds, and now you can just keep going. Now the user can actually go into the battery save app and can actually kind of stop you from doing that, but it does mean that for some applications, the first time they start up, they want to do a lot of syncing, and they certainly don't want to be terminated because the user says, there's something needs to go on there, I'll go and do something else. So you can have this kind of application trigger, which is just a general purpose trigger to run the background task and go off and get something done and then tell the user about it later on. So let's now talk about Tiles, Toast, and Action Center. So this is kind of number four in our list of things to do. Before, you might have worked with Tiles, you might have worked with Toasts, and if you're on Windows Phone, you would have known about the Notification Center. Now there's been some enhancements to that, and let's just go into a little detail about those. So Adaptive Tiles. On the left-hand side, this is not small, medium, and big tiles. This is the medium tile as it may appear on different devices with different resolutions and DPI. So you can never be quite sure how much of that text is going to appear, so it makes kind of life kind of difficult. So now with an adaptive tile, which is a single template, not the 80 templates, which do still work, you can actually go ahead and use this adaptive tile, which is like a semantic suggestion of what you want to happen. In this case, we have like two major groups, and we want the whole group or not the group at all. And in this case, you can see on the big tile, it's actually able to display both. So you have some flexibility, and there's some other semantic markup you can add into that. You see there's also options for, well, actually, there's no wrapping in there, but you can actually specify wrapping. So that's great because it's one adaptive tile, and you can actually specify only four templates now for small, medium, wide, and large. And you just send the message you want for those ones, and it will behave appropriately. So obviously you put your most important information near the top, and users will get to see that, and we'll see bonus information if they have a kind of additional resolution. So adaptive and interactive toasts. So you may have seen information on this at Build or elsewhere. This is the same idea that you have one template now, actually just one, because there aren't different sizes, for a toast. And in that toast, you can supply additional information like images and text, and it can be rendered appropriately. Initially, it might be compact on the phone, or it might be extended on the desktop, kind of expanded out, I should say. Now, also, you can add interactivity. So you can have a drop-down, you have buttons, you can even have a free text box in the toast. So, for example, the mail app might give you the ability to quickly reply, or a reminder allows you to dismiss or snooze. So the best thing I can do here is actually show you a demo of what one of these looks like. So let's close those and go into our next project. So this is the interactive adaptive toasts. Let's start this up. Now I'm going to start this up on here, and it's just kind of one button, and I click the button and it does a toast, but we'll see what's special about this toast and the way it works. So it's just a toast. So I click this here, and in fact, you can see I've got this kind of very big general kind of toast come up at the bottom here, and it has a few options for me. I can dismiss, which is a system option. I can defer, which is the same as snooze, which is also a system option, and the system takes care of that for me. Or I could click an eval. So next time you go to build, you can just have these things coming up, and you could quickly do an eval. So instead of deferral, we could have like a rating here. So that would be a much more convenient way to rate sessions for next time if somebody wants me to build that app for build next year. So Let's see, so I could do eval, or I could just leave it alone. If I leave it alone, it's going to sit in the action center. So it's actually sitting here. There's the one from a little bit earlier on, so I can dismiss that one. And notice how I can dismiss individual ones or the whole group as well. So if you'll see that it's collapsed, and I can expand it and see what I saw before, and I can do something with it. I can do the eval. Now, in this case, I'll do eval, and this will actually launch a protocol, in this case the web, but it can actually go into the app and do deep linking. So you have quite a lot of control over what you'd like to do. Just for fun, let's see if I can get this to work on the phone as well. And then you'll be able to see the same experience as it relates to the phone. So this is also the latest build of Windows 10 mobile that came out yesterday. So interactive toasts. So in this case, it's the same app running, exactly the same code. It was deployed directly to the phone. I didn't create a separate head or anything like that. So now if I do the toast on here, it'll be a bit slower because it's so slow. This is a Lumia 630, in case you're wondering. I get the same kind of toast. I can actually swipe down, see my whole notification center. And you can see it's right there, so I can click on it. And go to that takes me to the app by default. I could also expand it and do the same kind of things as I did before. So consistent behavior across the platform, which is what we want. When you have your toast, you can interact in the foreground and go to the app. You can actually just do like an app service behavior where you click something in the toast and it causes something to happen that the user doesn't see. Maybe it goes off to a web service, sets some flag somewhere. You can launch a protocol. Not with results, but just launch a web app or whatever protocol you want, or the system can handle it, such as dismiss or snooze. The toasts are expandable. You saw that. You can remove individual notifications, and alarms and reminders both show up in the notifications now, so it's great because you can go and find them. You see them quickly, you miss them, you can go and find them, and life's good. This brings us to number 5, Cortana. Cortana is now available on all screens, previously on just Windows Phone 8.1. Cortana provides voice-activated deep linking to launch an application and, in fact, complete whole tasks using just Cortana just to get stuff done. And we'll also see how you can use Cortana over large sets of data as well. So completing a task, for example, you might want to do something, so you might want to add a trip or cancel a trip. When you do that, Cortana will talk to your app, and your app might not know exactly which one you're talking about. It can offer you options. You can pick one by saying the first one, the second one. You can confirm your choice. You'll see a progress bar for what's going on, which comes from your app in the background, and then you can complete the task, all without actually launching the app. So, of course, the best way for us to deal with this is to show you a demo, and we'll see how well demo works today. So let's go into Visual Studio, and let's look at this Cortana app. So, in fact, the app's here, and there's a data model and an app, and there's this voice service library there as well. But I'm not going to run the app directly. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to show you the commands that are available, and we'll just use Cortana to launch the app, and hopefully everything will be great. So I can, for example, I have some trips booked, so I can say, hey, Cortana. Hey, Cortana. And she's not cooperating. Hang on, let's just try this. Oh. We're almost there. Let's try again. There we go. Right, let's try again. Hey, Cortana. Show my trip to London using AdventureWorks. Nope, let's try this again. Hey, Cortana. Hey, Cortana. Nope, we're not going to have success. I did mention this is an RC build. And RC is a maybe appropriate way of saying it. So here we go. So what can actually happen is Cortana can launch directly, and she can go into a task mode. So here I can launch into the app and navigate into the app, or I can go to my background task, which can step through and do the disambiguation that I was just talking about before. So I'll just launch the app just to make sure one more time. So we'll set this as a startup project. There we go. So this is the app, and it has a number of trips that I have in here, and I can add trips manually. The other thing I might want to do is say, you know, cancel a trip or make some change to the trip. I could do that without even launching the app, because I can say a phrase here. I could say, you know, cancel my trip to wherever, and I can say using AdventureWorks. So we'll just try one more time, see if I can get it to launch. I think with all this running on my machine, it's kind of asking too much. So let's pass on that. Again, at the end of the slide deck, I'm going to show you the a link to get all the access to all the demos that you've seen in the actual build talks where they were talked about. I actually boiled down about 16 hours of talks to get you to these 60 or so slides. So you can deep link into your app, and you can do multiple patterns now. So you can actually say things like, add something to something using a specific app. So you can say using the app, on the app, or with the app. We can say the app name at the beginning, or we can say the app name in the middle. So it's a far more natural way of talking to Cortana now than it was before. And there's also Cortana over data. If you go to this link, and again, download the slides later on to get all this information, I don't expect you to copy it all down now, you can easily kind of use Cortana to query data. So I could say, hey, Cortana, find me something, something. And in the background, your app then makes a request to the cloud and uses the Azure Services Search as a Service platform to get quick access to data that your app can then make some useful semantic meaning with. So now we're on to number six. We're just going to move into the UI portion of the presentation now. We're going to move up the stack from the operating system. So you may not know that actually there's a composition layer underneath the XAML layer and the HTML layer that you're using in your apps. And this is going to be significantly revamped and enhanced. And not only that, but it's now exposed as an API. So this kind of composition that you might have known as just the DWM or the Desktop Composition Manager or Desktop Window Manager before, but it does all the work of sliding things around and animating and talking to the GPU. On the left-hand side in Windows 8.1, you couldn't get to it. XAML would talk to it directly, but you couldn't touch it. Now in Windows 10 and Windows, I should say, Universal Windows Platform, not specifically Windows 10, it could be 10.1, 11, whatever, you can talk to the API directly. So now you can drop down and do sophisticated animations. Imagine a chart or a graphic that can whiz in and animate and have effects applied. In XAML before, it was very difficult to apply effects without going down to DirectX. And now it's easier actually to apply those kind of things and create nice fluid animations of the kind that Microsoft has shown in the productivity videos in the last few days and months. So let's just move it forward, and I'll show you a demo of how that works. So if I'm in my app here, I can show you the composition layer, which is actually living underneath the layer of the application that you normally play with. So if I launch this application, the app we're launching now has actually no XAML in it. So we've dropped down a layer, and what I'm doing is I'm just moving these visuals, so it's the visual layer underneath the XAML layer. If you ever did WPF, you might be familiar with the idea that it was a visual object backing all your objects. Well, this has actually been the case for a while. Certainly in Windows 10, it's just that you couldn't access that layer before, now you can. So there's no XAML here. When I'm moving things around, I'm doing a rotation and a clip just to show that those two things are possible. And you can see the nice fading. I could have 100 or 1,000 of these things over here, and it would still be pretty smooth. So let's say I take this app here, and I'll just show you the second app that goes with it, which kind of shows the kind of impressiveness of what you can do with this. Now, this might not be rendering particularly well for you, but I kind of urge you to go and look at it, and it's actually going to be available on GitHub, and I'll give you a Twitter account at the end that you'll be used to get hold of that information. So this is panning and rotating and flipping and changing the tint of the colors and zooming in and out, and it's doing it in an extremely fluid way on my device. And this is actually an intersection of XAML and the Composition API. So you can see here that I have some XAML here, but this whole surface here has been driven separately. And inside the project, I'll just show you how that happens. So in the main page, if I just pop down here, when that's actually loaded from XAML, we actually get the visual that backs that. And then we can start to do things like get me the compositor that's sitting underneath all of this stuff, and then set up clipping, and then create a whole extra of other stuff underneath that. Which actually means we end up creating a whole load of extra visual items and we load pictures on top of them. So we have image visuals. And there are different kinds of visuals you can use and apply different effects to them. And you can do all of that at low level. In fact, the first app I told you, like I said, it has no XAML at all. It's all at the composition layer. So you can mix and match the composition and the XAML and get really great effects and visuals in your app, especially if you're building, say, custom controls. So this is a reference slide for you to come back to in terms of the number of things you can do at that low level on composition and blending and all these different effects. I urge you to come back to these slides. Like I said, there's a lot to get through, so do download the slides. Here are the animations. Whoops, we've gone ahead too far. Here are the animations right here. So there's a lot of things you can do right now. You can do keyframe animation and some very powerful expression animation that the GPU will just go off and do all on its own. You don't have to worry about it. So it's great for building, again, those custom controls. And there'll be implicit animations coming soon. But follow the Twitter account I'll give you at the end to get more information. Number seven, we're getting close to the end here now. So universal controls. In order to be able to do all this work across multiple devices, you need to have universal controls. And that means that, you know, we have to do something with the fact that there's been some differences between controls. So there are converged controls. That means where you might have had controls that were similar, now they've been converged and made uniform across the whole platform. And this means HoloLens or, you know, all the way down to a small phone device as well, a tablet. And also some controls have been made universally available. By that, I mean like the pivot control, which was only available on phone, is now available across the whole stack. There have been some additional XAML things that I won't go into, like change notifications on control properties, perspective transform 3D that used to be in Silverlight and now is available finally again in XAML. You can now have XAML as the custom Chrome in the title bar of your app, another thing people wanted, inking everywhere, and now drag and drop, even from a Windows 32 app into your universal Windows platform app as well, and some enhancements to WebView to go along with that as well. So there are universal basic controls. So all the simple controls you might expect now work on the desktop and on phone and on the other devices. Not only that, but they understand the concept of whether they're being used with touch or some other input type like, maybe, for example, a controller. And as I mentioned, there's some controls that have come and now available across everywhere. On the left-hand side, at the top left, there's a pivot control. And you can see how it looks like on the phone. And on the bottom left, you can see that a content dialog, which is only available on one platform, now is available on both. And now also, finally, you can actually have map controls. So you used to have two map controls on different devices. Now there's one map control that works everywhere, which is fantastic. And here there's also an example of an auto suggestion box as well. So that's kind of, you know, makes things much easier to develop across multiple devices. So if I just show you now what that looks like. So new in XAML here, we've got a pivot control. So I'll just make that the startup project and I'll launch that. So you see this is an SDK sample and on GitHub, there's a huge number of building samples that are available for Windows 10. So here's my basic pivot control. You can see it here. In fact, because I'm in kind of such a wide window state, it's showing me everything and there's no scrolling. You'll see that mouse support is actually the currently selected one and I can click between the other ones like this. If I actually reduce the width of the window, you'll see that things will change slightly, and then I'm getting a different behavior. Plus, because I'm using the mouse, you can see that these kind of arrows have appeared on the left and right-hand side to guide me as well. So now I'm getting the kind of experience that you've seen before, where the left one is always the selected one. Now, you also see some other behavior here in terms of adapted UI, not just responsive controls. So I can also go back to my phone. And let's take a look at things running on there. So if I go and find the same application, so here we have the pivot, same pivot application, same sample, same code, it's not a different head or anything like that. So if I select the basic one, you'll see I get the basic control. Let's just go back and reselect that. There we go. And you get the kind of pivot behavior you expect where I sideswipe and move between things. I can even kind of tilt and sideswipe that way. It's not wide enough to get the full set, though, but it behaves kind of correctly. And I can switch to other modes as well. For example, I've got headers here, so I have kind of things you might expect for an email application. So the same control works, and it's responsive on both sets of platforms or all of the actual device families. So there's a whole bunch of other new features. This is another one of those reference slides you want to come back and take a look at it. Adaptive layout. So what really makes adaptive layout work is the split view, the relative panel, and adaptive triggers. These kind of controls in XAML that come together to make things work in a way that's really useful. You've seen this in a few of the apps I've shown so far. On the right-hand side is the main content pane. On the left-hand side, the red rectangle, is this kind of pane that you often use for navigation. It may or may not be a burger menu. You can choose what you want to do with it. It's up to you. Don't worry if you don't like burgers. But you can have this thing kind of inline at the left, or you can have it overlaid, and you can kind of make things the way you want them to be kind of really easy using the split view. Relative panel is a big win. On the left-hand side, you'll see this kind of like detail for a book or video or movie. And quite often, when the screen gets too narrow, that download button might want to appear underneath. Well, if that was a grid, you'd have to mess around with auto height rows and move things around, and it gets really messy. On the top right-hand side is how it's done in XAML today. On the bottom, you see I just list out the items, and I put this relative panel attached properties on things, and I can just say, put it to the right of something. So if I just move over, you'll see that we can add on adaptive triggers. And adaptive triggers allow you to declare the changes you want to make in XAML, so you don't even have to write code. And altogether, that leads me to this demo where I'll show you this adaptive layout in action. So here I have, there's two sets of responsive layout going on here. So there's the fact that I have this, you know, the split view going on here. And if I actually make this screen too narrow, it will do that job for me anyway. It gets rid of it, it closes that down. But there's another thing going on there. If you just see the subtle difference here, when I move here, it's moving those things from the bottom to the right, as I suggested. And doing that before would have been very difficult. But now it's actually much easier. If I go in and show you the XAML, we'll see at the bottom how that's been done. So in my Visual State Manager, there are actually a few settings. There's a 720 setting and a 548 setting. And you'll see that actually, for this background combo box, the relative panel attached property, hence why there's parentheses around it, is being changed. So as we get wider, we actually move it to be to the right of things. And that's far easier than doing it with lots of grid manipulations. Number 9, compile binding. This is a massive win for performance because now, and you can opt into it, you don't have to go for it. You can go for the standard binding syntax into XBind. XBind allows you to do the binding at compile time. Instead of using reflection at runtime, it's going to actually look at the actual types at compile time and give you errors when you compile if you've got it wrong, which means, you know, a lot of those painstaking hour-long searches for things that aren't binding properly, all those problems kind of have gone out the window. The slight difference is it doesn't use a data context property. It actually uses the window, the page, or the user control that it's attached to. So if you want a view model kind of action on there, you'd put a, say, model property and have it be a specific type, and then you could go, you know, model.something. You may have done this before when you've gone in through a control and then gone data context.something. And, you know, depending on whether you want one time, one way, or two-way binding, you know, you'll kind of use more memory and more CPU. And of course, that means you can kind of choose what's best for you. You can also mix and match between the old binding and the new binding. There's also binding for events. I'll just explain what's going on here. So this is a CPU graph. The top set is doing it the old way with intense binding, where there's lots of reflection going on. And the bottom one is doing it with compiled binding, where there's a significant, you know, reduction in the amount of CPU that's used. Also, if I want to do this compare with memory, you'll see that, you know, no bindings is the reference on the left, but you can see that the small ones and the big ones is the difference between the new XBind and the old binding style in terms of memory usage. It can be quite significant in terms of the difference. I'm not going to walk you through a specific demo for this, except to, well, I'll just show you the demo that's available, and you should definitely look into how it does things. So the demo that's available to you is one, again, on GitHub. And in this case, I'll just show you what it does so you can take a good look, because it would take too long to go through. We'd have a whole session just on this. But it shows you some basic binding, other bindings, lists and templates, and even the new X phase. X phase means that you can delay binding some of the parts of your data template as you scroll through a long list. So you'd see placeholder blank space, and then it would bring it in as things kind of settle down, and also event binding. So I'd encourage you to go and get this SDK sample and see what's going on with compile time binding. So there's some special rules. Again, this is a reference slide. Come back and take a look at this, or go and see the build video that's related to this about what you need to do with resource dictionaries. But there are ways to do it. It's just a bit, there's some workarounds you have to go with to make it still work. And you know, you may not want to, and this is event binding. Again, you can replace iCommand or event to command by using this. You can call a specific method that has no parameters or a specific prototype for the method, and you can actually kind of execute directly from a click. The only thing you can't do is you can't have the command parameter. So come back to this reference slide and see what you think. Of course, you may want to stick with binding. There's some times like with duck typing where you have two things that look the same, hence it looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, and you might want to still use old style binding. There's a few other instances. Again, come back to this or go to the build talk to get more information on this. That brings us to number 10, the last of our sections. So that's number 10, which is Visual Studio. So there's new stuff in the XAML language service, in Blend, in UI debugging, profiling tools, and tailored views. In the XAML service, it's been kind of revamped and re-engineered on top of Roslyn. This means that there'll be some advanced features coming in the future. Kind of they've rebuilt what they had before, added a few new features, and there'll be more to come. There's also the Peak service and the regions that I'll show you in the demo in a second as well. And Blend has been kind of revamped and uses a lot now of what's in Visual Studio, including the Solution Explorer. A lot of people have been wanting to have a consistent experience. You can save and load window layouts. The tools are now close to the design service, so there's less mouse cursor moving. And you can kind of do some reloading between tools without, you can move between tools, and you won't keep on getting that prompt now that asks you if you want to reload. You can do it automatically. Plus, if you're a keyboard fanatic, like I am, then you can actually use keyboard accessibility more pervasively throughout the product. Profiling has been put on steroids now as well. And UI debugging we'll come back to in a second. I'll just jump over to profiling. Profiling, now you have CPU memory. You had those before, but now you have combinations, including timeline. And there's a lot of information you can find out about why your app's not performing correctly. And these things now work for WPF and Universal Windows Platform apps as well. Plus, you can even use them for Windows 7 shortly in the near future. Tailored views is one last thing. You have responsive controls, adaptive layout. Tailored views is the idea that with one code behind file, you can have two XAML front files, and those can be automatically selected for you depending on which device family you're on. It may be with an Xbox, you just can't possibly think of a new way to do way to make it work, so you just need a completely different view. So final demo time now for number 10. So Visual Studio 2015 XAML. Let's go into here and have a look. And let's just run it in debug. So you can see what it does. So it's just a data bound thing. I actually have something turned on right now. So the reason it's not selecting anything is I'll just turn that off and I'll just show you something first. So first of all, I want to show you, if I go into the master detail page, I'll just scroll down here. You can see I've got my state triggers and all this other stuff and some templates. I'm just going to scroll around until I find what I want to show you. So here I have a data template, one here, and I have another one here. And I might have a lot of them, and they might be grouped together, and I don't want to deal with that all the time. So what I can do is I can say region templates like this. And I can go down here, and I can say end region. Comment that one out. And then with a little bit of luck, you see Visual Studio has now actually given me a region inside XAML. So that's great. And the other thing I can do before is I can now use the peak feature, which you may not know about already, but you can actually do this in code. But say I have an event click handler, I can do Alt F12 and it'll take me into the code. And I can change it and come back and keep kind of drilling in if I want to as well. The one last feature I really want to show you is the fact that when I run this application, let's just run it. And debug. There's a new window, and let's just restore that, called the Live Visual Tree. So what this means is I can turn on this mode where it's selecting things. In fact, it can be any application, doesn't even have to be the same application. And I can go and click on something, and it'll show me that information down here. So I can drill right down. In fact, I'm just going to switch back to the application I wanted to use. This one down here. And then you'll be able to see in the application where I'm drilling into. This is another sample that you can download from GitHub. So I can click on things, and if I just open the live tree, you'll see that I can go and click, say, this, and it shows me a lot of detailed information. I can go to properties, but these aren't your regular properties. These are actually properties I can look into further. And you'll see that it's ordered by kind of order of application. So local is the one that you want to see usually. Let's go and pick on a text item like this one. And then I can go into the foreground and actually change it. So I can change this to like green. And now in the application, it's changed. And I can do other things like I can go to the brush, I can go to source, so I can find out where that is. And it's even inside the data template. So it's a really powerful tool for people with Visual Studio now and XAML development. So basically, I've told you a few things there that gets you excited about the possibility that it's very easy now to develop across this whole range of devices. This is not the video you want to watch back at double speed. You'll probably want to watch it back at half speed. You want to see the build session. So I'm going to show you the build session slide. Again, download this deck to get it. There are something like 16 to 20 hours of video that I've distilled down to show you this stuff. And these are actually the reference numbers. If you go to the URL on channel 9 and use these numbers, you'll get information further to that. So download the slide deck. Now we're going to go into Q&A section. I'm just going to open the window and see how many questions there are, and see if there's any questions I can answer either myself, Mark, or with some of the people from the Windows team.
Hi, Colin. This is Mark. We have a couple of questions here that are interesting. The first one is there any more progress been made in the enterprise brokered WinRT component, allowing brokered WinRT components to operate in a sideloaded enterprise type situation?
I think that was that was happening with WPF apps, where you wanted to be able to talk to the WinRT API. And a significant number of those are now available. So a lot of this stuff is available to WPF apps, unless people from the Windows team want to chime in on that.
While we're waiting, I have another question as well.
Go on.
Does XBind require the models being referenced, since model and view can be in different projects?
So you're automatically referencing the type of the window or the page or control you're in. If you want to talk about if you're using it in a data template, especially in an inline data template, then you actually have to say what the type of is. So you would have to have that type declared as in the namespaces at the top of the XAML file.
One more question, and I think I got the answer to this one already, but in Windows Universal Apps, is it now possible to target platform API, for example, in Windows Desktop to access Win32 API?
Oh, the other way around? It was to a certain extent before. I don't know if that's opened up any more, but I mean, the platform is now extremely large, and there's probably not a lot of things that you'd want to access that aren't now available. So it's worth checking what's available in the new APIs.
Another question. Is there an MVVM framework that uses XBind?
I'm sure that some people, maybe our friend Laurent Bignon, might be working on that with MVVM Lite. But it's the same kind of concept. Once you've got yourself a model, you can attach to it and you can bind. I mean, it uses the iNotify property change, iNotify collection change. It's the same kind of concept. So there's no reason why you couldn't use MVVM. Now, I know that there's a template that the Windows team or DX is creating to give you like a bootstrap up on using that stuff, but I think it uses the old binding right now, not the new XBind. But there's no reason why you can't go MVVM with the new one as well. I'm not too sure with myself whether I'd go with XBind for commanding, stick with iCommand instead.
And that is the end of the questions I have currently.
So the other thing is, if you have any further questions, I want you to kind of ask me the questions on Twitter using that colonizer. And then what I'll do is, if I have any extra questions I collect like that, I'll put them all on the blog post at colonizer.com. I'll just say we've got a few minutes left, maybe a couple of minutes. Is there anything that any of the Windows team people who are on the call, if they'd like to add to that, that would be just unmute yourself and make any comments that you think might be relevant, or anything I've missed that you think. I just want to go back and talk about just go back for a second and look at this slide here because I skipped over it kind of quickly.
Colin, I'm just going to step in just real briefly here and let our attendees know that there are polls that are going to be going up on the screen as you do your closing comments. So folks, if you look to the left-hand viewing area of your screen, there will be some polls or before that pop up. And Colin, you may proceed. Thank you.
So I'm just going to show you back these references again to the build things. And this has been a very fast presentation because I wanted to get a lot of stuff in there. So if your feedback is it was too fast, don't worry, just go back and watch it at half speed and go download the slides, especially this slide, which gives you the reference you need. Now, the stuff I showed you on composition is very powerful, but it's also still in development. If you go and follow Win Composition on Twitter, that team would be very willing to engage in a conversation with you, and there's an email address they also have. And there's a GitHub repository for those samples.
Yeah, hey,
also
Colin.
Go to the GitHub repository. If you do Windows 10 samples, you'll now find it's all on GitHub.
Hey, Colin.
All the samples I've shown you.
Can you hear me? This is John.
Hi, John.
Hey, just a quick update for that. We opened up the composition GitHub yesterday, so now we have an actual formal GitHub for samples dedicated to the API available, and you can find that off the main Microsoft Hub.
Great. I think it's like github.com/composition or something like
exactly
that.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Yeah, cool.
Anybody tweets at us, we can give them the locations. There's a few samples up already.
Great. I think people just won't realize how powerful that actually is until they start using it.
Exactly.
There'll be some amazing like charting controls or other controls that people can build with that. You had a Twitter sample. I don't know if that's going to go up there because the sample they can get right now is the basic two I had, the simple one without XAML, and the other one which is the picture library one as well.
Exactly right. The photo wall that you showed is up there right now, and the basic composition sample. We're working very hard on the Twitter sample and a few others to get them up. We're also creating a folder structure by SDK so people, as Insider builds come out, they can actually track what sample works where.
Yeah, and also I didn't have time to show you, but that same sample with the smooth animating, zoom in and out, color changing, you can actually run that on Windows 10 mobile.
That's right.
It's pretty cool because I ran the same code. I had it running this morning, but I didn't have time. But running on there, you get the same performance on a tiny little device. My 630, Lumia 635 actually, can run it really smoothly. So it's pretty amazing stuff.
Perf is a huge objective for us, so we love feedback on that. Yes.
Okay, I want to thank you for coming. Keep feedback coming. Follow me on Twitter. We're actually doing this kind of same thing again in a couple of weeks. There's called the Windows 10 Readiness Event. If you send for Windows 10 Readiness, you'll see that actually there's a website where Microsoft MVPs are presenting in different countries, and that's 1 to 3 hours of content. So it'll be this stuff, but kind of more relaxed. And more in-depth in various places. Again, it's kind of like a live webcast format with a recording on demand afterwards.